Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, one and all, to our discussion topic episode. We do these once in a while, usually to shuffle schedules around and that sort of thing, but we'd like to make sure you have content on the weeks where things aren't as normal as usual. I'm Scott Johnson. I'm here with all the regular crew. We got the two Bryans. Hello, Ibbitt and Dunaway. Hello.
Oh, hi. Oh, hello.
Boo. And also, Randy Jordan, also right over there. Hi, Randy.
Oh, yeah. Good morning. Good day.
Yep. I'm Scott Johnson, of course, and we are here to discuss one of our favorite topics, and that is horror movies. Why do we like them? Why are they significant in the film business? What are the ones we go to all the time? And what do we tell people who hate horror movies? Why, you know, how do you explain yourselves when you see something like Evil Dead Rise, which is really gross and bloody, but you loved it, and you go to a friend or a family member, and they're like, "Ew, a horror movie. Do you like that?" And you have to say
how
yes.
Can you watch that?
Yeah, I run into that a lot.
I go through this all the time in my house. We watch. I call our TV the murder box because all it ever plays is true crime stuff all day long. And then I go, "Hey, can we watch a horror movie?" "No, that's gross." And I'm like, "But we're watching murder every day. Can we just watch some fictionalized murder?"
That's
only
funny.
Real murders in the building.
Yeah. No kidding. That's crazy. I didn't know you. Well, I guess if you're in a household that likes the true crime but doesn't want any fake crime, I guess.
I think it all comes down to the graphics of it. Usually most of the true crime stuff we watch and listen to is mostly descriptive, verbal, that doesn't get into any real visual or graphic details.
Yeah, but I know, I think we know you well enough to know that if you're going to watch a horror movie, you're interested also in plot and character and story, not just buckets of blood, right?
I'm always into special effects. You give me a Muppet, I am down. It's like, "Oh, we can watch a horror with a Muppet in it? Hell yeah, let's do it."
Yeah.
Wait, Child's Play? What else? What's another?
Oh my God, like, everything like Critters, everything during the
80s. Oh, gotcha. Your Goonies,
your Gremlins, okay. Ghoulies, you name it. It has a puppet in it. The Puppet Master.
That's a good one. So you don't mean Muppets like actual, like, you know, not Jim Henson workshop Muppets.
Freddy's got his big arms out there and he's being puppeteered.
Or when he's eating the snake, or not eating the snake, but he's like a giant snake mouth eating the girl. Yeah. That's kind of puppetry. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel you. You like practical. Okay, well, this is a decent place to start. You know, back in the day when we were all up and comers,
growing up,
it was mostly practical effects, almost entirely practical effects. These days, it's often a mix, but there's a lot of digital enhancery going on, you know, with your special effects, with your whatever. But also back then, blood looked like strawberry jam, and today it looks like blood, and, you know, we've sort of come a long way, but I don't know. Can you, if you watch a movie that's mostly special or mostly computer aided special effects for a horror film, does that diminish the fun you're having because it's not practical?
It kind of, there's something physical and real about it. So the era Scott is talking about is what's known as like the slasher, the splatter horror movies where there's a lot of blood. Letting there's a lot of just blood on screen everywhere, disembodiment, you name it, all that stuff. And that's kind of what I grew up on far as horror goes.
Yeah.
And that's my jam. Special effects and stuff, they're fine, but I think one of the greatest benefits of making horror films is they typically can be done in a low budget manner, but they can elicit the same amount of response you might see in a big budget movie with some really big special effects. You can very easily elicit an emotional response from, you know, some simple special effects or practical effects, whereas you might have to do something a lot bigger and a lot more expensive to really create that impact, like blowing up a building or blowing up cars. That's kind of expensive compared to mm-hmm. just, you know, some simple makeup and blood.
Sure. And then ideas that take your brain places that, you know, that are scary. Right. That's the thing I look for is I don't care. Well, I do care about good special effects, and some of the bigger, sloppier, louder ones are fun. But what I really look for is, like, oh gosh, 2022 is a great year for horror movies. If we're talking modern stuff, is amazing. Okay.
Yeah,
stuff.
Modern yeah. stuff. Yeah, more of the what is the more?
It's an incredible year. But like Barbarian was my favorite. And Barbarian mm-hmm. was this crazy mix of genres, I thought, and mm-hmm. mostly succeeded because it just knew how to create incredible tension, and whatever yes. special effects were needed were not primary. They were there, but they weren't like the core or the crux of the story, and I think that's why I loved it. So my tastes these days are different. When I was a teenager and I was rebelling against my parents, I can't wait to hear Randy's take on this, because I know he grew up in a home where none of this was allowed.
Right.
But I remember being like, oh, Freddy and Jason, blood everywhere, ha ha.
The slasher. Yeah.
Yeah, it was almost like a rebellion aspect to it. Whereas today, I'm more like, yeah, I've seen that. Let's get some cerebral, you know, let's do Hereditary, or let's do Midsommar. Yeah. Let's do something that's really going to take me somewhere that I'm not comfortable. I think I look for
what, you know, what is the definition between, because some of those I would say are thrillers with horror elements as opposed to horror movies right. with thriller elements. Like Midsommar is such a, there's some blood, there's some gore, people falling out of, getting pushed off of cliffs and right, bars and right, stuff like right. that. But I would almost call that a thriller with horror elements rather than a true horror film.
Yeah, this is why I'd really prefer it if we would refer to them as scary movies.
Mm. Because, okay.
Ooh, I like that. Because it's sure. easier to draw a bright line between a movie that has, you know, some horror elements but is really not a scary movie, right? Yeah. Like that's yeah. a thing you can actually do. There's a lot of movies out there where a character has a really bad dream and the dream is portrayed. It is not a horror movie. Mm. But it, if that happens repeatedly throughout the film, you can come away going, man, that scared me.
No, your definition is great, because it takes us from when we were kids and the scary stuff was the stuff we saw versus now, where we prefer the stuff we think. You know, the stuff that we don't have to see on screen to imagine,
like Jaws.
Is horrific.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. That's a good way of putting it. I think that is a good distinction. Still, though, it's almost like Ari Aster, I think is his name, the creator right. or the director of Midsommar and Hereditary. Mm-hmm. They are two of the most scary scary movies I've ever seen mm-hmm. in my life. But they're not only are they not your typical horror movies, they're also not typical movies. Like, he's almost making his own genre over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard to classify.
A24 has really brought their own kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's this whole new movement going on that's really interesting. Have you seen X yet?
Yes. The one where they're all filming a porn out in the countryside.
Right,
or whatever.
Right, right.
Not
right.
the prequel
Pearl.
What is it about last year? Like we sacked Nope. Nope was from last year.
Right.
There was a movie
Horror
last year.
Back.
It's not just back. It's just good.
White Noise that I'm saying you shouldn't watch. It's a Noah Baumbach movie. It's so freaking scary. Terribly scary. Don't watch
really?
White Noise.
Really?
Or, is that the reason you don't want people to watch this, because it's scary, or is it not good as well?
Oh, no,
as
it's a pretty competent film. Okay. It's just, it's really good at being really scary.
Oh, that Adam Driver, Greta Gerwig deal. Yeah. I heard about this. I like Noah Baumbach movies. See, what happened last year? Last year's weird. It was like the culmination of, I don't know, everybody being locked up and writing scary shit during a pandemic.
Exactly, well, kind of like that. That's exactly what horror, if that's how it functions in our society, as far as I'm concerned, it is a release valve. It is a place for us to go to feel safe while also experiencing some of that horror and kind of addressing it, because we can't necessarily go directly to our all of our great fears, because we're not good managers of that. And so we use entertainment, especially something like horror, to kind of address some of these bigger fears we have. And we can put it on screen and kind of make fun of, or at least encapsulate it. Hmm. I'm a big proponent of, if you have a fear inside of you, the worst thing you do is keep it in. When you speak it out loud and you say it, it loses a lot of its power.
Yeah.
And so horror films are kind of like that. We're in a safe space. We get to, you know, kind of live out that horror that could be whatever.
Yeah.
And then we can, you know, feel better about ourselves. We feel a little better.
Well, I think this is, you've tapped into something, because I think this is 100% what I like about horror movies and why I seek them out. And I, every day I'm like, what's a cool horror movie right now? I want to see it. And I think I do that because, unlike horror video games, which terrify me and I hate them, I only play them
because it's happening to you.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Because, I'm in control of my destiny in those games. In those games, if I F up, it's on me. If I die, it's because I did something, whatever. Like, it's having a direct role in how it plays out is not my cup of tea at all. But when it comes to watching passively other people deal, even when I know they're being stupid, or I'm like, that guy's going to get killed if he goes out in the forest or whatever, even though I know those things are coming, I'm like, well, what's happening to those people? I'm just an observer over here. And that observership makes it so I can explore these concepts and explore these fears that we all probably have in some form without getting burnt. And people always say, well, why do you like Mad Max so much? Or why do you like any of these other things? Same deal. These are not futures I want. I don't want to live in a wasteland where everybody kills each other and fights over gas or whatever. But I want to watch other people do that.
Is there hope? And if it did play out, can I use that, you know, that mind exercise, and can I make better decisions and that kind of stuff? It's a coping mechanism.
Yeah. I think that's true. I don't know what it says about any of us if we believe that, but I don't know what it says about me, but I think
I don't play those games because I know I'd make worse decisions than the people that I see in movies who split up and stand in front of plate glass windows in their underwear. And,
we have definitely, one of the feelings that we've all experienced a lot of during the pandemic was our loss of control of things. And so everything seems a little bit bigger, and it's nice to go to horror and see some things that we can actually manage that are scary and can control. And I think that's probably the reason why you're seeing this kind of little resurgence a little bit.
Yeah. Are you, Randy or Ibbot, do you have a recent, I don't know, what's your recent favorite? Like, what's one that really jumped out at you? Like,
Barbarian's the one that I remember most recently saying, that is what I like in a horror movie. Like, we get some gross out, like, scary ass elements, and that, just the visual of that hallway that gets dark way before you think it should. And that is a thing that just freaks me out anyway. And the enclosed spaces, you know, the that feeling being down in that basement. What is that phobia?
Not claustrophobia. It's something else. It's like a
claustrophobia. Yeah,
is it claustrophobia? I thought it was a different kind of thing. But I could smell that hallway. I swear.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Everything about it.
See, you have a fear of smells.
I do.
There's definitely.
When I see something like that, my first thought is that place reeks. That I don't want to spoil anything, but the thing they discover down there, it's like that's probably the worst thing ever in the world. Like, good Lord,
there's a real fear. There's a real fear of old things, and I think it's very it's just built into us as humans that all of us have a little bit of fear of old things. I think because it's a protection mechanism to keep us from messing with old crap that maybe make us sick. And so I think Scott's more in tune to that.
I think that's actually thing. I think that's probably true of most of our fears, right? It's all survival mechanisms. So in my case, if I'm in a musty old place that smells like, you know, dead cats or something, my immediate inclination is get the F out of there. I don't want to be there. Yeah. I could never be somebody that helps, you know.
This is where death is. Goodbye. I could never
do Tina's job because she has to work. She has to walk into places, people's homes where, you know, they've been losing control of their bowels and stuff like that. There are places that she has to rub Vicks Vapor Rub on her upper lip like she's
horrible.
Like she's a medical examiner or like an autopsy.
Wow. Is it like horror?
While autopsying. Oh, this is
Yeah, no yeah. kidding. But is it like hoarder type situations? Like
some of them, okay. yeah.
That would just, yeah. I don't think I could do it.
Some of it is, you know, some sadly are dementia and Alzheimer's patients. And
see, that's my big fear.
Don't have control and yeah.
Yeah.
That's really rough.
My mind. That's a big fear of mine.
Yeah. Nobody, yes. ain't nobody mine wants too. That. Nobody yeah. wants to lose their.
And that's,
their
and that's what, we, that's what we've addressed a lot. And there's a word we've all learned over the last couple of years too, gaslighting. Mm. You know, it's like, am I crazy? Are you saying I'm crazy? I'm crazy.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think we're drawn, this maybe Randy, throw in on this one. What do you think about the subgenre in horror, the found footage stuff? I feel like we got yes, a weird relationship with that shit.
Yeah,
I feel like.
Yeah. It's interesting. That's a really fun way to go about looking at scary movies as having some prestige. Yeah. So I linked you to this Paste magazine listicle, and that's what Paste magazine does, by the way. They do listicles. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. Listicle. Like it's a really good, like some people took a lot of time to come up with what are the greatest 100 scary movies of all time.
Right. Mm.
And the very first, the number 100 film on that list is Blair Witch Project, which I get, okay, that's fine. That's fine. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, when the question is, when you rephrase it, what makes a scary movie also a great movie? Like, well, and I want to ask each of you, like, give me your two or three greatest scary movies of all time. When you start asking that question, boy, found footage is a hard sell. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how to make a found footage movie a great movie because it's trying to be
it's very
reality
nature.
The reality TV, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of scary movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like if you look at this list of the top 100 scary movies and you get up near the top of the list, there are real feats of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I was gonna say my favorite recent scary movie, which is now 6 years old, can't believe it's 6 years old, is Get Out by
watched right here.
Yes. Jordan Peele.
So good. Mm-hmm.
And we didn't sack Get Out.
No, we didn't. We did nope. the other one. We did. Yeah, nope. So we apologies. Nope.
Yeah, we did.
So, nope. So Get Out comes in at 27 on this list. And this list, by the way, peters out in recent years because the way they approach it is you can't be one of the greatest of all time when we haven't had some time to think about it.
Right.
But number 27 on this list, that's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. For Jordan yeah. Peele,
especially when the majority of the top 20, 30 are stuff, are things from the 60s and 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but to have
yeah,
a newer one that competes with all that is impressive.
Yeah,
yeah. So found footage feels like the opposite of greatness, mm-hmm. but that's because found footage is designed to not include all the things that you use when you're making a great film, you know, found footage is not going to have great sound design, for instance. It's
right.
It's going to have single microphone, or at least it's going to try to make you think you're hearing things from a single microphone.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting skill set because you run the risk of being too good of a production and having it look too polished, right? Like too much like it wasn't found footage, pretending to be found footage. But if you go too far the other way, it just looks like shit and it's not as compelling because you're missing music cues or all the things that usually make horror movies work. And so I think it's a really hard thing to pull off well. I think there's been a few that are good. My personal favorite is probably Quarantine. This came out in 2008. Yeah. It was Jennifer Carpenter from
Dexter,
yeah, the sister.
Yeah.
She was in it. And it also is one of these movies that gives you an ending that is not, you're not happy at the end of this movie. There's no one made good.
Much like the end of the real pandemic.
Yeah. Kind of like that. And it's a rough one that I really think fondly of because I think they kind of nailed the balance. Cause I think the balance is hard. I don't even think Blair Witch in retrospect really nails the balance very well. Mm-hmm. I think it's a hard one though. So, you know, found footage, I know it has its fans and, you know, Wrecked 1 and 2 are well thought of. There's others, I guess. I guess the Paranormal Activity movies are all found footage, sort of.
Yeah.
So I like
I mean Cloverfield is a scary movie.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I think it's that does the found footage thing really, really well, even to the point where the stinger, or it's really not the stinger, it's the last thing you see before the credits, plays on that found footage aspect with something that's not part of the full found footage style of the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Right. And if you want to explore, you were talking about dementia patients and stuff and how, you know, that in a weird way, it's like real life horror having to deal with that and help people with it and all that. There's a 2014 film I saw when I was subscribed to Shudder called The Taking of Deborah Logan. Mm-hmm. And the synopsis is an elderly woman battling Alzheimer's disease agrees to let a film crew document her condition. But what they discover
and
is
then
that
forgets some, and then agrees again.
Yeah. But they, it says Sarah, but then they discover it is something far more sinister going on. That movie left a little bit of a scar. That's a rough one. That's really, if you want to play with those fears of memory loss and what it might mean and then all that, that movie's pretty, pretty damn good.
It doesn't make you feel any better afterwards. You're like, oh yes, it's still going to suck.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't make you feel better, but that's the thing that I love about, oh, and I forgot his name. The Midnight Mass guy. The Irish name.
Oh, yeah, Matt.
He's over at. Shit, he did. He did Dr.
Mike
Sleep.
Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan. Thank you. I knew it was Irish. Yeah. I knew it sounded
Matt
Irish.
Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan did such a different thing for me with all his work. But the first one I saw was Haunting of Hill House. Was my real first exposure, not really knowing he was the director of other movies I'd seen. But when I'd seen Hill House, the series. He did this thing that just still to this day blows my mind, and he's done it with his other work as well, which is he can make me freak out. He can give me a really scary story. He can do all those things, and he's really good at those things. Very intense, very good. But he also had heart in all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a way that horror movies don't usually do it. They're very nihilistic. They're very like, nothing good's going to come of this. And instead, I really cared about these people. And the horrible things they were seeing, I felt like I was more invested in them as people and characters having to deal with it and face it. Like, he's a magical dude. I don't know what he drinks in the morning, but whatever it is, keep going.
As long as I live, I will never forget the end of episode 5 of Midnight Mass.
Yeah.
I look forward to rewatching that series every 7 years. It's going to take some time before I can rewatch that series because the end of episode 5 is so incredible. It's like nothing I'd ever seen or heard. It's mostly what you hear,
I agree.
And I was like thinking about, like, again, coming back to this list of the top 100 scary movies of all time. We've sacked 4 of the top 5. And
what are they? List them. What do you got?
That's The Exorcist, The Shining, Alien.
We didn't do The Exorcist yet.
Oh my God!
I know it's a it feels like we should, but we haven't. We need to. We need to get that in there because I need to face.
We did one of the sequels, though, didn't we? Or no?
I don't think we've done any of those, as far as I know.
We just did that.
I know that as a kid, and I'm sure I speak for a ton of people, maybe even us. That movie left a real hole in my heart, and I need to see it again to deal with it. You know what I mean?
And even seeing it recently, like I've watched it within the last 10 years, and there's a couple added things that weren't in the original cut, like a little spider walk down the stairs and a face you see above, the, you know, when she's in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Oh, that still freaks me out. It's such a well done.
I watched The Exorcist at the drive-in movie theater. From the back seat, because my mom went to see it and she just thought I was asleep in the back seat. So I was just four, something like that.
What year was it?
73.
73. Oh, God. Okay. So we must have been watching or rewatching of it because it was just driving in the movie theater.
Yeah. Back in the day, a movie would come out in 73 and then it would be playing at the drive-in 3 years later.
So I was like 4 or 5. I remember it being like 4 or 5, sleeping in the back seat, woke up, watched some of it, said, I'm scarred for life. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah. Thanks, Mom.
That was almost my experience with the Amityville Horror. And that ruined me for a long time as a kid. And I think that, you know, the second time I ever watched that movie was with you guys for FilmSack. And looking at it, it's like, wow, this is so silly. However, there are still things in the movie that freaked me out. And I think it's playing off of those fears I had as a kid, as opposed to all the stuff I've seen now and God, you know, how there's no you know, that kind of stuff is so cheesy and special effects are so weak. But for whatever reason, I just taps right into.
Are so weak.
They're weak. they have no realism.
When we were going up, the slasher was really big. Some people listening here probably were into the big, like the psychological and that kind of stuff, like The Exorcist, which is more in the 70s, a little grittier. But you want to talk about silly movies, like the Atomic Age before then, where we're looking at like giant ants and, you know, giant the blob. That was a real fear because we didn't know what was going to happen with, you know, after the atomic era. It was like, well, it's going to go on, but that stuff.
Yeah, there's this moment
now.
And it's not a moment. There's like a decade when you have The Blob, The Thing, The Fly.
Yeah.
And, you wouldn't guess that two of those end up becoming like renowned, you know,
right.
Like it's just kind of shocking that the thing is, you know, usually top 10. It's I think it's number five on this list of the best scary movies of all time. The Fly is at number 43, and they put both of them at number 43, which I think is really funny. The original and the David Cronenberg version.
Get into Cronenberg.
He's got almost his own genre, doesn't he? It's not that. Yeah. Not
he's
normal.
Body gore. So it's
gross out horror.
Kind of. I mean, it's more like not even gross out. It's like I watched that one that newer one with Viggo Mortensen. I forgot the name of the damn thing.
Yeah.
They all cut it. They slowly torture themselves, and it's how they get pleasure or whatever.
Yes.
It's a weird dystopic future thing.
That's like Hellraiser, right? Is that what they do?
But that's what I'm saying. It's like Hellraiser does its thing, and you easily go, oh, that's a horror movie with a bunch of gore in it, and it's torture porn kind of. You watch his thing, and you just go, oh, this is just really, really uncomfortable. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but Cronenberg operates on a different level.
Which so David weird. Do you prefer, David Lynch or Cronenberg?
Oh, my Ooh. Gosh. Depends on what movie we're talking about, I think.
If I could get David Lynch to tell a straightforward story, I would prefer him. If I could get David Cronenberg to stop making like a guitar made out of skin, I would prefer him.
You would prefer that? Right. Okay. A guitar made of skin. That's good.
Yeah, because David Lynch is the thing he did just recently. Not even recently, but more recent than the original Twin Peaks series. Was this reboot on Showtime, like 8-episode reboot. And there is one episode in that thing that just genuinely freaked me out, where I had a hard time sleeping. And I go back and I think about that episode so much, and I kind of want to watch it again, and I kind of don't. But
But
I almost need like the closure of watching it after this much time has gone by.
You opened a wound, and it needs to heal.
Needs to heal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of David Cronenberg, I have added the movie Videodrome to our watch list.
Sweet.
Watch Eraserhead? We need to do that too.
Oh, I'd love to do Eraserhead. It's not. Yeah. There's not a lot of audio in Eraserhead, but I'd still think
that's
going to
be
a
tough one. I've been curious.
That might be, maybe we do that as a watch along, because the ones that don't have a lot of audio is a good one for us to. We don't talk over a lot of speaking, and it's easier for, you know, not having clips and that sort of thing.
Right. And there's all kinds of weird visuals. So we could definitely talk about the weird visuals.
Before we close things out today, I just was curious if you guys have a feeling about the proliferation of internet-based horror ideas. Like, there's a movie this year called Followers. It's actually reviewed pretty well, but it's like,
what you're saying. Like
followers on Instagram and then
movies
something.
That are done completely using internet technology. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, like combination, even if it's just a movie where, you know, how The Net was this horrible thriller about the internet and they all know where I'm going, and it was just not very good, but it's more like whether they use nothing but Zoom to tell the story, or it's that inside of Zoom is a creature, or you know, whatever. How do we feel about? I guess it is our modern day, but do we have to have horror movies with cell phones?
I mean, isn't The Ring kind of like that with the videotape? Not really the videotape generation, because it came out so long after videotapes weren't a thing, but it still relies on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
A time of technology.
That's a good point. It's just the time you're in.
4K TV is what you're saying.
Sure. And we like to deal with the fears of progress, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever that progress is. If the progress is technological, then we like to deal with
the
fears.
Oh, yeah, like Megan. Oh, that was so Blumhouse. Oh,
Megan's awesome.
To see that.
That's so good.
Yeah. Megan was great. Oh, I loved it.
But I mean, my answer to that question is, please don't take away my Black Mirror. I feel like I feel like Black Mirror is a series of movies, and some of those movies are great. Like USS Callister is great, and Nosedive is great, and Hated in the Nation is great. And those all, they all depend on high tech, modern internet, Wi-Fi, you know, connect social media. Shut Up and Dance is awesome. Like I love these episodes of Black Mirror.
Oh, they're so good. And this year, and I love when it comes out, there always seems like the day one comes out, or the month one comes out, there's always a story that matches one of the segments. And that happened with that first one, that Jonah's terrible thing or whatever.
Jonah's awful.
Jonah's awful.
Right on.
So good. Yeah. And they immediately, like, there's this contract from the studio saying, we're going to use your AI likeness in perpetuity without giving you anything. Like, I couldn't believe how on the nose that was.
Yeah,
that
just blew my mind. So perfectly timed.
Well, and it combines a bunch of stuff, right? It combines AI and quantum computing and of course there's like gross out stuff in that it's a movie. These are small movies. I actually feel like we're navigating our way into high tech as the basis of our scary movies pretty well.
Yeah.
I want to agree with you that when it's just people on a Zoom call and something happens and you see it on the screen and I don't know what happened to that person, it can be really tropey and repetitive, like, and trite.
Too much like found footage for me. I mean, it's just the next phase of the found footage stuff. I mean, except you're watching it now. I don't know. Maybe downloaded the video. I don't know.
The other thing I've noticed is a lot of the most highly respected newer films, the ones, like, even if you look at 2023's so far list of the top rated horror films, they're almost always foreign. Like, we're lagging behind over here. They're like, you know,
I think that stuff adds to it. Like, would the witch have been as scary if it felt like it was in modern times, or maybe not modern times, but in, you know, like a familiar American setting?
Well, I more mean these things are like all not English. There's like, you know,
like foreign films,
Spanish directors films. And all of that. Whereas the Witch was at least English. It's not that it's a problem. It's hard for me because I don't want to watch horror movies in subtitles. That drives me crazy in horror movies in particular. I don't know why.
I think horror is more universal. So, I mean, you don't need a lot of dialogue for horror usually. So, I mean, all those things play into what you're talking about, which is more accessibility to audiences. And it's another thing I love about horror is the fact that you don't have to have a big name actor. If you got a clever idea that speaks to people, you don't have to have a big budget to make a horror film. You can just have all of these great smaller filmmakers have an opportunity to really expand. Like, Sam Raimi changed all kinds of stuff when he busted on the scene. And horror to me is such a great entry level.
It's a great gateway for young filmmakers. There's this, like, the number one rated Rotten Tomatoes horror film this year is one called The Bone Woman, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. So really highly rated. And it's made in Mexico or something, and that's fine. Isn't me going, oh, it's a bad thing. We don't make our own good horror movies anymore. I just mean, subtitles in horror movies. I can't do it. I don't know why. It takes me out of it.
Good news. You have other options, right? Like Evil Dead Rise is a legit good movie.
Scream
6 is a legit good movie. You should check it out.
Yeah.
There's like, you have, you're always getting options. This is like a genre that just will, it's like with infinite ammunition to fire. Like, we're just going to keep coming. And sometimes it sounds like we're just reaching back in time and mashing things together. Like, there's a new, this new Russell Crowe movie called The Pope's Exorcist. And it just sounds like, they just were like, oh, I'm going to make the Poltergeist.
I heard good things about that. And it was based on, I mean, all these Exorcist things are supposedly based on a real story, but that's supposed to be good.
That's what makes it scarier, right? If you put that at the top of your scary movie, based on actual events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I take it back. It's a 49%, but audience is like at 81. I don't know. I might need to see that. That seems like it might be okay. That was the last question I wanted to ask before we go. Is anybody got anything on the horizon where they're like, oh, I'm just jonesing for this?
I love watching. I have several services that just do nothing but, you know, transfer horror films, and just like when I feel like horror, I turn them on, see what's on.
So old stuff will always fill that void for you, I guess. Anybody else? I can tell you mine. Mine is probably Exorcist the Believer. The reason I want to see this is I like this director, David Gordon Green. He makes good horror movies. And he also directed that Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, that amazing Nicolas Cage movie. So I want to see his take on The Exorcist. That's the one I'm excited about.
Yeah, for me, it's less about what's coming up and more about what I missed. Obviously, The Insidious. I haven't seen a single Insidious movie, and now I feel like I want to go back and watch all of those.
Those are pretty
Insidious. Was The Nun part of that, or The Nun was part of another series?
Nun was a spinoff of The Conjuring.
The Conjuring. That's it. That's another one I want to look at, too.
Yeah, Conjuring movies are good. All those, what's that director's name? Not David Wang. He started with he hit it big with the Saw movies, and then he's gone on to make really great horror movies. I can't think of his name.
Right.
Anyway, Asian director.
The one awesome. I missed that everyone has said is spectacular is called It Follows.
Oh, yeah. It Follows is great from a few years back.
I will be watching that maybe a little later this year and get into spooky season.
Definitely.
I can't think of what that follows. I don't know what that is.
It follows.
Oh, that's good. You should watch. You should definitely.
It's like a thing that gets transferred from person to person, almost like The Ring.
Smile.
Ring. A smile.
Smile. Loved Smile. Yeah. Again, 2022, man. What a year for horror movies. It was so good. Anyway,
when we talk about the future, though, for me personally, I feel like I am just living, waiting for the next Jordan Peele movie. It is currently got a working title of untitled fourth film directed by Jordan Peele. That is if you search untitled fourth film directed by Jordan Peele, that is the working title of his next movie. It is currently in production.
It'll be called whatever, so that you can go Get Out. Us? Nope. Whatever.
Nice. I like it. It Follows 95% of Rotten Tomatoes. You got me so interested. Good. I'm going to check this out.
Yeah, I've been
told so many times that it's not just scary, it's not just memorable, but it's a well made movie. It's very
intense.
The consensus says smart, original, and above all terrifying.
Yeah,
one of the modern horror movies that works on multiple levels and leaves you lingering for more.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I lingered, but yeah. Yeah. I had to get back over to the Scream box on Plex TV so I could watch all the. You know, all the horror, scary stuff. Yes.
Oh, it's got that Jake Weary in it. That guy's in a lot of horror movies, and he freaks me the F out. He's a scary guy. He's in Zombievers, a movie about Zombievers.
Zombievers.
Hilarious.
Great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. That's our discussion episode about horror movies. Let us know your favorites. What gets you going? What do you want to see coming up? What's your favorite in the past? All those kind of questions. We'd love to hear your feedback. Either email us or leave them on the comments or wherever. Filmsack@gmail.com or filmsack.com for all your links. Do that today. That's going to do it for us. You know what? I'll do it like the old way. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Scary.
That was the goal, to see what he was going to do. Nicely done. We'll see you guys next week for more Film Sack.
Get more at frogpants.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.